your shit ready, nigga. These niggas right here?
Yep, that's the
right,
niggas right
on.
There.
Singing to the bottom of the ocean where you floating. Have her hop into the bed, now she backstroking. I think I'm in my real love in East Oakland. All she know is Mac Dre and Magazine Street. It's hard really trying to make it ends meet. When you spend all your money from the last week. And your mom know you pimping shit get real deep. Spending L's on a mail and some new posts. Cassette deck in my whip, I'm a two show. Truth is, all I wanted was a white hoe. Or a nice girl to say she don't do blow. Confused as a nigga from the wrong side. Who hang out with the enemies at all times. This is my life, give it to you 9 times. If this is peace, don't give it to you 5 times. Bullets fly by, ducking from the drive-bys.
Couple bottles of Cleek on the legal pad. Pinning these illegal raps. A kingpin in this digital trap. Underground rap got me that Lamborghini you see parked out back. So attentive is about bags. My incentive to carry the whole set on my back for the set I attack. These jet light flags I plant all over the map. These seeds growing the trees, they bear fruit. My whole team eat. That's being the boss to me. What I grew up to be. Talk is cheap. Unless you speaking to G's about cheese. In which case, be mindful of what you say. Gotta stand behind the words if they ever come a day. You can't get away easy, the streets ain't sleeping. They saw you slipping and decided that's a perfect time to get you. Documentary, Umbrella Symphony, Umbrella Symphony, Umbrella Symphony. No sweat.
What y'all doing over here, man?
We're just kicking it, philosophizing on God, church, bitches, and all. I'm schooling these niggas on the aspect of religion.
Religion?
And on factual, actual studies, you know what I'm saying? Y'all coming from Compton.
Cooling like my fan, bitch, I've been a man, dog. Dark house like a Bari, I got dope, then
some. That's my kid on the flip phone ring. Unzip, then I hit it. Badass shawty said she love me for first name. Fuck her, then I'm racing, then I pass it to my bros. Full metal jacket on me, looking like the Tin Man. Better smell this dope, could have bad for the environment. Yo, bitch heard I'm getting money, want me like a fireman. Slim ass nigga wearing acne, look like Slenderman. Tony Soprano, a two type of nigga. Kind personality, the other make my head hurt. And that shit make my head hurt.
Oh, shit.
I'ma hit you where it fucking hurts.
I'm moving in the streets.
What's happening?
I'm moving in the streets.
What's happening?
Like, oh. I'm moving with the pigs.
What's bragging?
So moving with my chicks.
Hello. Teo, shut up. Wow, I haven't said that one before. Hey, we're back. This is Word on the Street. I'm your host, Isaac. We're right after Nardwar, the Human Serviettes show. And today, I didn't do it earlier. I had to do it now. And today we got Hunter Carter here. What's up?
Hey, what's up, Isaac?
We just heard a song by him and Jay Worthy. What was that one called?
That was called Out of State Boomin'.
And Jay Worthy just came out with a new tape. We just played a song from that. It's called Umbrella Symphony. That's the same name of the tape. And that's with Currency. And just right off the bat here, you've been here before, about a year ago.
Yeah.
But we're just going to do a couple quick refreshers. So first, who are you?
My name is Honda Carter. I'm a producer and artist from Vancouver.
And who are you named after?
A couple of things. Myself. Honestly, I got the name because one time I was going by a certain car dealership. And I was going to dinner with my mom, and I saw this dealership, and I read the name in a certain way, and I thought it would sound cool as a rap name. It also has like a certain amount of like weight to it too, like Carter. Like, there's a lot of pretty big rap artists, you know, with Carter in their name, like Jay-Z,
Sean Carter, yeah,
yeah, Lil Wayne with his albums. But yeah, I just think Carter like holds like, you know, really nice amount of weight to it, so and it looks good too, like,
yeah,
right? Like when you see it, like, you know, featured on something or like produced, like produced by Honda Carter, it's like looks kind of official.
Yeah. And your real name, Miles Smith, you're also named after something musical, so who are you named after there?
Yeah So my parents named me after Miles Davis, which is pretty cool. It's interesting too, because jazz music and just like urban music in general, something I've always gravitated towards. That's pretty cool. It's kind of fire being named after like a jazz legend.
So I'm gonna throw you this right now, and I don't think you're gonna answer me because I ask you this all the time, but when's the debut project coming?
Soon. Yeah. Honestly, man, like I'm kind of caught up right now with a couple projects, and I'm in the process of redoing like a video. So I mean, as much as I'd like to drop it like as soon as I can, I think it's best if, you know, I release these certain things first and get a little bit of momentum off of it, because I haven't dropped in a while too.
Yeah,
you know, but I think it just I just need to like kind of build, you know, and then drop it all at once, kind of thing, you know.
Thinking back to last time I talked to you, we talked quite a bit about the difference between Vancouver and LA musically, and I just wanted you to sort of think about this question again, but how does being from Vancouver play into how you put out music and how you present yourself as an artist, as opposed to, you know, when you're in LA and you're in other places?
Yeah, I mean, it's literally the same thing as last time. Like, you know, like there's not a big urban community in Vancouver. Other genres such as like, you know, folk music or pop music. I mean, pop is very much hip-hop nowadays, but, you know, like, electronic music, like, that's kind of, like, it's always been really relevant in Vancouver, and hip-hop and, like, R&B and, like, soul and all these, like, other genres haven't really been, but when you go to a place like L.A., which has so much, like, history, also, Vancouver's, like, a pretty new city, too, right? And L.A., like, you know, there's so much history behind it, and I was actually reading a statistic. It was, like, I think it was, like, 60... Like, I'm pretty sure it's over 50%, but, like, over 50% of, like, the population is, like, Hispanic in L.A., which is pretty cool. That's, you know, it's a big, big chunk, right? So obviously urban music, you know, takes more control in that sense. But yeah, I don't know. Just that, really, like, you know, just how Vancouver is so new and, you know.
Speaking on that, I wanted you to talk a bit about Jay Worthy. You know, you work with him a lot.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think that plays into his influence, and how does he influence you? You know, he's someone who's pretty established in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone in hip hop kind of knows him, even though he's rather low key overall.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he has that same sort of locational geography thing with LA and Vancouver. So what do you think about Jay Worthy?
Straight up. I mean, like, yeah, that's the homie. Like, we kind of feed off each other, really. You know, I could bring like a certain young, new, kind of fresh sound to what he's already been doing. And he kind of brings, like, you know, that more hood, like, kind of raw, old school kind of sound, right? So, like, we kind of learn off each other and shit. And, you know, it's crazy. He's put me on to, like, a lot of, like, West Coast artists as well. But, yeah, I mean, like, we just kind of keep each other sharp by, like, working with each other. Like, I record and stuff in my house, like, all the time with them. And just watching his process and kind of sharing my process with them, like, you learn a lot, right? It's always dope, like, because I work a lot by myself. So when I get someone else in the room, you know, it's very refreshing.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of clears my mind and lets me kind of think about other ways of doing certain things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you're both a rapper and a producer, and you do both those quite a bit. I would say production more so overall.
Yeah, I would say so, yeah, production.
So which is more important to you, and, you know, going from where you are right now to making some bigger moves in the near future, what do you think is going to stick for you? Are you going to be more of a vocalist, or do you think you're going to be more of someone who's behind what it sounds like?
I think at the end of the day, I'm always going to be a producer, and I think that being a producer is easiest to get in your foot in the door with, you know, certain people or certain things. Like, not everyone wants to hear, like, a crazy feature, even if it's really, really good, right? Like, I think musicians and artists are very, very selfish, and which is not a bad thing, right? Because, like, they really believe in, you know, their own music and stuff. But I think as a producer, it's a lot easier to, you know, go up to someone and be like, yo, like, you know, this is something I produced, right? Because, you know, it's just something they can get on, as opposed to, you know, working with someone as, like, an artist kind of.
Yeah, you know? Just jumping on from that, like, have you had trouble, like, transitioning, like, producing for someone and then maybe trying to hop on a track and they're like, no, you're a producer? Like, that's what Kanye talked about a lot. Yeah. Is that people are trying to hold them back?
I mean, yes and no. Like, there's a time and a place for both things. Like, I was talking to my manager a while ago, and, you know, there's certain, like, beats that I've produced and stuff for myself that I really, really like, right? And I'm like, again, like, being selfish, I'm like, yo, like, these are crazy, right? But sometimes you just kind of have to let things go and, you know, give someone else the reins, so to say, right? You can't be conceited in that way.
Who are some of your favorite producers, some that are more important to you? Because we got a lot of artists in here, but it's not too common that someone comes in and says, yeah, at the heart, I'm just a not just, but I'm solely a producer.
Yeah. I mean, some of my favorite producers, like, Pharrell, definitely. I also looked at him as an artist too. That's kind of like, I've always liked his look, you know, like, he's an artist and a producer. And, I also like FX Twin. I don't know if it's pronounced Aphex Twin. I'm pretty sure it's FX Twin though, but
I don't know.
Anyways, he's kind of like a, he makes like ambient music and stuff. So it's definitely like a different look, but I really enjoy it. Who else? James Blake's pretty cool. I was listening to a lot of his music a while ago. Again, like, you know, it's a lot of like artist producer kind of guys that I look up to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Last year, I remember there was this question I wanted to get to, but we never got the chance. We ran out of time. You had a story about meeting DJ Khalil, and you didn't get share that. So I wanted you to tell us that story.
Yeah. So this is crazy. So,
and maybe also provide some context,
some backstory,
why DJ Khalil is important to you and some of the hits he's produced or some of the artists he's worked with.
Yeah, so DJ Khalil is very much a legend in the rap scene and the hip-hop community. He's worked with, like, Logic, Eminem, 50, a bunch of people. Like, if you pull up his discography, like, it's pretty amazing. It's pretty overwhelming as well. But anyway, so I got a chance to meet him because I'm working with his manager. And I met him, it was about 2 years ago. That was about the time when we first did our first interview. But anyway, so he was actually sick at the time. And, you know, I was really bugging his manager. I was like, yo, man, like, I want to meet Khalil, you know, like, bring him in. And he's like, oh, yeah, like, he's sick, like, blah, 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 right? And, you know, like, I haven't seen, like, I've known his manager for a while, and I haven't seen him in a long time. So I went down there anyways and went down to the studio. This guy greeted us. This is all in L.A. as well. This guy greeted us, and I thought he was his manager, Greg. And I was just talking to him like he was his manager, and kept talking to the guy. I was like, yeah, you know, like, I haven't seen you in a while. Like, you know, like, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, it's good to talk again. Like, blah, blah, blah. Like, how's it going and shit? Oh, excuse me. And, yeah, so we go into the studio, and I sit down. I'm playing music with my homie Friday Night. He's from Virginia. And he's like, yeah, yo, this is, like, cool. Like, blah, blah, blah. And we're just kind of, like, picking his brain a little bit and talking to him. And the whole time, I think this is his manager, right? And then this one guy walks in the room, and he's like, hey, what's up, man? Like, how's it going? Like, I haven't seen you since you were, like, a kid. And I was like, oh, man. Like, I've been sitting in the room with, like, DJ Khalil for the past, like, 50 minutes. Like, and I was like, oh, man, I should have played, like, you know, some more, like, hip-hop stuff, man. Like, I was playing, like, a lot of kind of my own, like, new stuff, which is, like, very poppy and hip-hop, and like I was like, oh man, I should play some like crazy stuff, right? But it's kind of a crazy story. Yeah, I'm always gonna beat myself for that one. 100%.
Fair enough. I've been reading this book, and when I was reading this week, I wanted to bring something up. This book is called Book of Rhymes: The Poetics of Hip-Hop. It's by Adam Bradley, and there's this quote, and it's by Bun B. He's half of UGK. Everything I've written has bits and pieces of everything I've ever heard. Any rapper who tells you a different is a liar. You can't write a book if you've never read a book. So the more rap I learned, the more I was able to bring rap when I decided to rap, but this was all subconscious. And the author says, rap is an amalgamated art. It relies on the vernacular exercise of the individual artist working through the different influences close at hand to create something new. Mm-hmm. The fact that this often occurs subconsciously is part of the mystery poetic creation. So when you're talking about DJ Khalil and you're talking about Jay Worthy, I think this is important, and also imitation is important. And another thing he said here is that every artist in every genre goes through an early phase of imitation. But the thing with imitation is you don't want to bite. You don't want to be a biter. Mm-hmm. That's a term that they use in rap, because if you're biting, you're copying. But if you're imitating, you want to pay homage to mm-hmm. people that are important to you. So
yeah.
How do you make the distinction as an artist and also as a producer?
Yeah.
To imitate and amalgamate and not bite.
Yeah, so I mean, like, I think that's just anything in life, you know. You learn by imitating, or I personally would like to say emulating, so to say, like but like, I mean, at first, you know, you're learning things, you're copying, not necessarily like the music and like everything, but you're just kind of seeing how they do certain things, doing it in your own way. And then obviously, you know, you get, you know, experienced enough, and then you can kind of go on your own and do your thing. But yeah, I mean, yeah, like,
it's a tough question. Mm-hmm. It's tough to know how can you answer that. I mean, maybe the best way is to hear it. So let's play a couple songs, mm-hmm. a couple of your songs, a couple that are unreleased, mm-hmm. maybe.
Yeah.
And we'll come back around to some more discussion questions, some more that everyone can come in and talk. So we got a couple songs here. Do you want She Write Fake first?
Oh, you can do the other one first. The
other one first?
Yeah.
Okay. And that one is called?
That one's called Fred Perry Polos.
Fred Perry Polos. Okay.
Yeah.
So we're with Honda Carter here. This is CITR 101.9 FM. And this is Fred Perry Polos, and we'll play another Honda song after this. I'll play a couple ads, and we'll be back.
Yes, sir.
Hey man, I already know, nigga. I already know the fuck going on. I've seen that shit. Started coming through, bitch.
Something short of Jordy. I'm special, the bitch is so party. My nigga, you cannot go for the. For us, you cannot go for the. A dub, a scrub, you is it. I came in, no room, I fit in. These acne's, my raggies can't fit in. A lot of the guala, no kidding. She'll say there will never be something. I told her, fuck yourself, an assumption. She'll say there will never be. She'll say, there will never be something. I told her, fuck yourself, an assumption. She'll say, there will never be nothing. She'll say.
Bitch, bow down to a law, yeah. Turn the boss, nigga, she won't fuck with a boy, yeah. Wake up in the morning feeling great every day, yeah. Knowing that my ex bitch does not feel the same, yeah. I'm a nice nigga, but a scumbag. Red flag, then I see that coming. That's your fault for believing me. That's your fault for believing me. Reel the bitch in like a fish, then I set her free. No feelings, no, I could not do that. Prove that how I got the money that I should have. Knew that I was gonna come up all the shit. It was set in stone. 20 years later, now these majors in my fucking phone. Now get the fuck up out my fucking zone. Really testing me because my patience being really low. Yeah, I'm sorry that I gotta go. But I ain't sorry that I had to blow.
She'll say there will never be something. I told her fuck yourself an assumption. She'll say there will never be nothing. She'll say there will never be something.
like it's all an assumption. She'll say that we'll never be nothing. She'll say, she'll say.
Discorder, that free magazine from CITR, has been documenting the best in music, arts, and culture since 1983. Let's see what one man of prestige has to say about Discorder.
What up, though? This is Big Snoop Dogg, and I fucks with Discorder magazine. How about that?
Smoke weed every day.
Pick up a copy around Vancouver or f*** with Discorder online at discorder.ca.
It's not just rich people that own the media.
I own my 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 media.
The Media Co-op is a grassroots national news network that's owned by its members. Join us today at mediacoop.ca/join.
Shut up, Teo. Hello, hello, hello. We're back. This is We're on the Street. We're interviewing Honda Carter today. He's here in the studio. We just played a couple songs of his. There were two songs. What were those ones called, Miles?
One of them's called She Write, and the other one's called Fred Perry Polos. And I both produced, mixed, mastered, and wrote them as well.
Everything.
Everything.
I think Zubin's got a question. We're going to bring in this discussion now.
Yeah, I guess this question, I just, like, was thinking about the, like, topic in general when I was just, like, going through your Instagrams real quick, you know. Got to do a deep dive. But, yeah, I noticed, like, you're pretty, like, bare bones in a sense. Like, you know, you're not, like, a huge post or anything. And, like, compare that to, like, you know, the new wave of rappers where it seems like social media is the most important thing to, like, kicking off a career.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I hate to bring him up, but, like, somebody like Tekashi, it's like, like, there's people like that where, like, pretty much they wouldn't have a career without their ability to gain hype through social media. So, like, I don't know, how do you see that role? And, yeah, how do you think it affects, like, career development?
Definitely. I think it's also different. Being an artist versus a producer as well. Like, obviously, I'm both of those things. But as an artist, you need to have, like, a certain image, right? I mean, as a producer as well. But, like, as an artist, like, your image carries, you know, a lot more in your career. Also, being a producer, like, I find, like, I can sit back and work smart, not, like, hard like an artist. Like, you know, if I'm placing beats, you know, it's like going to a camp or, you know, meeting up with someone's manager and passing off music directly. You kind of skip going through that, like, whole, you know, Instagram process and, like, you know, really trying to, like hustle, right, online and stuff. And it's pretty tiring, honestly, really, like. Like, when I come up, like, I'm definitely going to get someone to run my socials and stuff. Like, obviously, I'll still, like, do my stuff, but... Yeah, I just think it's different, you know. But I think, yeah, it's easier being a producer because you just can kind of go in and place them, yeah.
What do you think about Instagram getting rid of showing the amount of likes now? Do you think that that's a good thing or a bad thing as someone who's an artist? Even though, like Zubin said, your social media is pretty low-key relative to a lot of your peers, do you think it's going to have a big impact on promotional?
Yeah, so I read recently that it was like a temporary thing. It was actually like a test. I don't know if it was in America as well. It's only in Canada, right?
Yeah.
So it's like a temporary thing, and who knows, in the future they might change that. But I mean, it's pretty weird, like, being an artist and seeing how many likes you have. Like, it's kind of like necessary sometimes. Like, it's almost like you know, like a flex in a way, but like, I don't know, like you can still see people's like follows and stuff, but yeah, I don't know, man. It's going to be weird. It'll be weird if it continues, because I think a lot of people have a hard time adjusting to it.
Do you find that now when you're scrolling and you're looking at other artists, does it impact the way that you interpret those things?
Yeah, it actually does.
So how? Honestly. So now when you scroll past something, I don't know, you scroll past someone really big, just say Travis Scott,
yeah.
But then you scroll past like someone else,
yeah.
Just say Andrew, mm-hmm. And you can't tell, you actually can't tell what has more attention. How does that make you feel? Like, what do you think when you see that?
Yeah. I feel like, you know, people go on Instagram and they look for those numbers, right? It's like kind of like a reassurance thing. And it's like when you don't see those numbers, it's like, okay, next thing. Okay, I'm going to scroll on to the next person. It's kind of weird. But, I mean, it depends, right? Like, obviously, like, if it's your homie, like, you know, you're going to do more than that. But if it's just like this, like, you know, big rapper that you kind of look up to or whatever, and, like, you're kind of admiring him and looking at his stats and stuff, I think likes is a big, big thing, right?
Mm-hmm. It kind of plays into, we had this conversation in the past couple weeks that we live in an age that's so disposable and continuous and fast. Everything just goes so fast. Like you just said, you scroll past so much in like every day, right? So thinking about that, I wanted to ask about SoundCloud-wise. Is SoundCloud super oversaturated in your mind? Is it kind of like when you're on Instagram, as someone who's always on SoundCloud, is it oversaturated in that sense that you scroll past stuff, you can't find stuff, or how do you feel about SoundCloud?
I wouldn't say it's oversaturated for everyone, but it depends on what type of music you make, really. You know, if you make hip-hop, I think a lot of things get categorized under the hip-hop umbrella. Now, like, I've always thought, like, you know, maybe music should be a little bit more split up and, like, have its own, you know, different venues. Like, not even just by genres, because sometimes genres don't even cover that, right? Like, there's a lot of, like, different, you know, hip-hop artists that, like, don't sound like a traditional, you know, artist, and they still fall into that category. So I wouldn't say it's saturated, but it just depends on, you know, what you make, really, and mm-hmm. how you differ yourself from everyone, really,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm. We were also talking about this recently, things like Spotify, SoundCloud, what have you. There's so much music, and streams are so important now. You're a producer and a rapper, so maybe you'll think about this a bit differently from someone like Andrew, because we asked him about this too, but...
Mm.
Do you feel discouraged in that you need to get those streams to maybe get noticed by someone? Or do you feel like with what you have, you'll be able to find a label, and through that label, you'll find the promotion that you need? Because I know you're pretty, you have a pretty strong opinion about how important a label is.
Yeah, like, man, you gotta say that again, man. Please.
Okay, so... Streaming, Spotify is big.
Yep.
Right now, you know, we see artists that are independent. We see artists that are signing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, labels can be important as a promotional tool, because you need that many streams to go platinum. You need that many streams to get noticed enough to put on shows. So what do you think about that, streaming and staying independent versus having a label? Or what option do you think is best? Which one is best for you as a rapper producer?
Yeah. I think it depends on the person, right? Like, if you're willing to hustle every single day and kind of do what I try to do, is, you know, get out there, make, you know, certain scenarios kind of work in your favor. I think being independent is okay. But, you know, if you're someone that kind of needs like this big, you know, label behind you, or you kind of need certain things like studio time, and you know, you don't have those resources, right? Like, going to a label, obviously they're going to offer you a lot more than what you can offer yourself. So I think it just depends on how much of a hustler you are, really.
So are you a hustler?
I would say so, yeah. You know, and like everyone, you know, I do like to put stuff off, but you know, when it gets down to the wire, it's like I'm very much gonna go out there and put myself in front of someone if it's gonna, you know, further my career, you know.
So is it important to you to be independent or to own your masters? Like, at what point are you okay with just letting it go and letting other people control your image, your marketing, your music, what even music you put out or what kind of music you'll make? Like, how important is it to you to be independent?
I think with the whole masters thing, like, that's pretty big. A lot of artists nowadays are trying to come back and buy out their masters. And that's something I've learned too, even, like, just coming into the music industry, like, just learning all the business side of things. But yeah, I think having ownership of your stuff is, you know, super significant, and I think people need to be more upfront with the business side of things, even though they might have managers, right? But I think it's best to be honest with people upfront and, you know, discuss, you know, okay, like, hey, you know, what am I getting out of this? You know, just the big questions right away, so it's not this big awkward thing. It's like, oh, you gave me this beat, man. You didn't tell me, like, you know, it was going to cost anything. And then you got this whole little back and forth thing going on, right? Like, it happens. And I think just being open to that right away is big. And that kind of, like, solves a lot of the problems that you'd face down the road with ownership and certain things. But
it's definitely an important part of the entertainment industry in general, because I know from the acting and film and television side is the same thing. It looks very glamorous and beautiful from the outside, and you get into the business of it and you realize how hypocritical it is and how you have to kind of jump through hoops in order to even have a foundation where people will start respecting you and will look at you as an artist and not just a quote-unquote nobody. You know, so I definitely agree with, you know, it would be nicer if they're direct and upfront. You know, it'd be nicer if society was direct and upfront, but I think in the reality, you know, it's pushing past that initial phase of independence. You know, that where, like you're saying, hustling, right? Get past the struggle to a point where then you're big on your own and you don't owe it to anybody except yourself.
Yeah.
Speaking on ownership, I wanted to ask you, because you're a sampling addict, you sample all the time.
I like sampling.
I remember we were talking about this at Degway. we were talking about Danny Brown and how he had to pay, I think you said, like, $40,000 or something, like, ridiculous.
Yeah,
just to, like, clear his samples.
40,
like,
yeah.
Like, a lot of money.
Yeah.
Do you run into problems with that, even though you're not super big right now? Do you run into problems with clearing samples?
Well, see, when I first came up, I started sampling. And, you know, it's a lot easier to sample than, you know, make a melody from scratch, right? Like, just doing that. But obviously you run into problems with that. So I don't know, as of lately, like, I haven't sampled in a really, really long time. I try to avoid it because I like, you know, creating my own music, and it's also just better to learn that way, right? Like, you know, I learned keys and I learned guitar a while ago, but, like, keys as of recently, just by putting away the samples and just, you know, trying stuff. But yeah, it's pretty messed up, man. Like, I heard Danny Brown on Twitter one day. He's like, yeah, like, you know, like, I ran into problems, like, I spent more on clearing samples and I lost money on the album, even though Atrocity Exhibition is one of my favorite albums and like a phenomenal album. Yeah, it's like a really fine line, man. You know, I'd say you can't be codependent on it unless you're willing to shell out the big bucks, right? But yeah.
Another thing about ownership. Sorry, Zubin, you go for it.
I was just, like, kind of a side note, but, like, how do you feel about, like, interpolation? Because I've kind of read about how sometimes, like, some artists kind of use it as a way to get around, like, having to clear samples.
Yeah, like getting someone to play it, essentially.
Yeah, essentially, yeah, like recreating it, like, kind of skirting the copyright laws. And
There's a really big fine line. Like, I know Robin Thicke and Pharrell, I think it was for Blurred Lines, you know, replayed, right?
Yeah.
They replayed something, and to me, it didn't sound super identical to it, but, you know, they still ran into problems. So I'm pretty sure, even as well, if you interpolate something and play it yourself, that's still considered sampling. So you still, like I think, yeah, exactly. Frank Ocean did it a bunch on Blonde, and they consider it sampling on the discography. And like the Beatles were like, I was looking at the friggin' discography. It was like the Beatles. And I was like, what? Like the Beatles, man. Like exactly. Right. So, yeah, it's crazy, man. Yeah.
Another thing I was going to say about ownership is how do you feel about ghostwriting? Do you think it's something that's forbidden, or do you think it's something that is okay if it's acknowledged? What do you think about ghostwriting?
Yeah, ghostwriting. I think, you know, it's like Frank Ocean was a big ghostwriter for a while. You know, he wrote a lot for Beyonce as well as other artists before he got signed to Def Jam. But yeah, I don't know, man. I don't think
Def Jam artists, right?
Yeah, probably a bunch of like a huge amount of the Def Jam artists, but I don't think it's like a bad thing being a ghostwriter, right? Like, you know, they say like there's this big thing about like Drake and how he has a ghostwriter. Yeah, well, like, so what, man? Like, he's an entertainer at the end of the day, and it's like he runs a business, right? Like, he's got like, I don't know how many people working for him, like with OVO. It's like you don't have the luxury of time sometimes, right? So it's like, okay, I'm gonna bring in a ghostwriter, right? I don't really see a problem with that. Yeah, you want to say something?
I mean, it's interesting too, because in contrast, like Kanye definitely openly uses ghostwriters, and like he just, I guess, has a fan base that like stands for him harder, so he doesn't get flack for it. Like, yeah. I guess maybe he's more open about it too. But I think I was also bringing up Frank Ocean though too. It's interesting because Def Jam was essentially trying to like pigeonhole him in the role as a ghostwriter. Like, they didn't want him, like the reason why he released Channel Orange under like Frank Ocean was because like Def Jam wasn't gonna let him release his own solo project because they wanted him to keep writing songs for their bigger artists at the time. So yeah, I think it's, I don't know, it's an interesting scenario.
That's unreal. I didn't even know that. That's crazy.
We're gonna say something, Khaled?
I'm just curious, like, do you really think it's not important for rappers to write their own lyrics? Like, how important is the authenticity to the to the music or that genre specifically? Because so many people were so diehard about being authentic from the heart. Like, where is that line? And like, does it really matter? Like, because a lot of the time people are still lying even when they write their own rhymes.
Yeah, 100%. I think it depends on how big you want to be, really, right? Like, if you want to turn, you know, what you're doing as an artist into like a business and like a big thing. You're going to have people that work for you. And like I said, you know, you don't have the luxury of time sometimes to write. And I love writing for myself. I, you know, it's great, but you know, also like I'm not a massive artist yet. Right. So I think it's a lot different at the top. Yeah.
The album word is yet.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. What's this?
Hello. My point to that is your authenticity as an artist can be calculated into so many different fractions as who you are as a person, right? So lyric writing is only a small part of that. Mm-hmm. Like, how you want to represent yourself as a quote-unquote like authentic artist varies depending on like what you think you can do as an artist to make you shine, right? If lyric writing isn't there, there are other ways to represent yourself. That's what I would say to that.
I think it's true for a lot of like pop singers too. Like, most of them don't write their songs, but like a lot of the big ones.
Like. Yeah, exactly. Like, I doubt friggin' Madonna or even Michael Jackson. Like, you know, I was reading Quincy Jones's autobiography, and you know, he's not, like, people think he's like, you know, this big writer guy, but he's got like two writers with him. Like, a lot of these artists that are massive, like, you know, have like two writers that sit in with them on a session, right? Like, yeah. I'll say so.
Earlier you were talking about how you liked making music on your own, but you really enjoyed producing with others. So like when you talk about producing with others, do you ever offer lines of your own in like a collaboration, or how much of that in your own process is building off of each other?
Yeah, like, you know, I offer my input on certain things. I think that's what a true producer is, right? Like, taking hold of, you know, the entire project and overseeing it, not just producing the beat itself, right? That's kind of like the way I see myself, similar to that of like a Pharrell. You know, he kind of oversees the whole thing. Yeah. Yeah, almost. Yeah, straight up. It's like, you know, yeah, almost like a producer in the movies kind of thing.
I think it's interesting that in hip hop, it seems like it's almost, not quite though, it's almost a stigma to ghostwrite at some points, because say you take the example of Drake and Pusha T when they're battling it out. Mm. If you learned, did he ghostwrite? Did Drake ghost, was his response ghostwritten or was that him? I'm just saying, okay, so in that context,
I'm not too sure, man.
In that rap battle context, if you heard, oh, he ghost wrote it, then everyone would call him out, you know?
Yeah, like they totally.
You can't, then a beef would be different, you know? Like,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Like making singles to make a lot of money is one thing, but like beefing, especially with Pusha, to represent your skill as a rapper, you're gonna, then it's meaningless if somebody else wrote it.
I think you kind of said it earlier, though, that Drake is, like, an industry, and he's always surrounded by people. I guarantee, like, he was in a room full of 12 guys when they wrote that.
Yeah.
He did not just go into his bathroom, just, like, write it out and be like, oh, yeah, I have to do this. No, he was hyping himself up with the security guards.
Straight up. And that's what, you know, I don't think people even talk about, like, camps a lot, really. Like, you know, like having, like, a camp is massive, right? Like, a camp is literally a bunch of people dedicated to one artist, whether it's, yeah, like OVO is a great example of that. Like everyone is camps, Justin Bieber, and it's just like a bunch of people dedicated to someone else, you know, and like producing for them, writing, right?
Well, I think ghostwriting has like different, it can serve different functions depending on like who you want to be and like the kind of artist that, like, because Drake is mostly like, yeah, like entertainment, like he's not really, I'm going to be honest, I don't really listen to Drake that much, but I don't think he really, like, talks about super personal, in-depth things. Like, he mostly just kind of keeps it, fairly, like, general, I would say. But then I remember, like, Kanye, there was some talk about, like, the fact that the verse about him talking about his daughter in Violent Crimes, that was ghostwritten.
Oh, yeah.
And the whole song, yeah. And then, like, everyone
that's
was kind of, like...
amazing song. I love
yeah,
that song.
And then it's, like, it came from a really vulnerable place. Like that's what everyone thought. But I don't know if... because, like, I think ghostwriters still work with the artist on some level. So I don't know if it's, like... I don't think it makes it any less, like
decredible.
Yeah, exactly. It does not make it any less meaningful. It's just that, like, he had some help writing it, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it wasn't personal for him.
Exactly.
But then, like, for someone like a Drake or like I'm blanking, but like someone like big people, like, I think they ghostwriters serve a different function. Someone like Ariana Grande, like, I don't think she'd sound the way she does without ghostwriters, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's big.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, on that note, I think it kind of reminds me of just like somebody helping to ghostwrite like an autobiography, where in that case, like, the story is still that individual's, but I mean, they might have been just celebrity for whatever reason. Yeah, they're not a writer.
Yeah.
It's also it doesn't mean it's any less talent either, because these writers are still, you know, talented, extremely talented in some cases as lyricists, and I think that's an important aspect that, you know, a lot of people don't look at is, yes, okay, maybe it's not coming 100% from that artist, but it doesn't mean it's not, you know, as filled with passion and talent as it otherwise wouldn't be if there wasn't a ghostwriter, right? There's still people behind it.
At the end of the day, it's still, like, it's not just the ghostwriter taking over for that artist or, like, pretending to be them.
Yeah.
It's still a collaboration process. Yeah. Like,
it's mutual.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't mean that, like, they weren't a part of the process at all. Like, they were both equally just there. Like, he just had help.
For sure, yeah. I don't think people should be discredited for it too, right?
Exactly.
It's just like, you know, it's like, I think as we go into the future, it's going to be a lot more common.
Mm-hmm.
And it already kind of is. So it's it's not really like this big elephant in the room anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, I think, again, I was reading this book, and Chuck D, who's part of Public Enemy, very important group in hip-hop historically, not super well-known anymore, but he said, I really pride myself on being a vocalist, so why can't I vocalize someone else's writings? And he said, I think often that the mistake made in rap music is that people feel vocalists should write their own lyrics. That's been a major, major mistake in hip-hop, because not everyone is equipped to be a lyricist, and not everyone is equipped to be a vocalist. I think coming from someone like him, who holds so much power in hip-hop, in the whole origin of it, that he's saying it's okay, then it is okay. And it's really interesting now to see sort of this change in that it's accepted because even the past couple of years, Drake gets shamed for it so much, but I don't think there's anything wrong with it anymore, because I remember thinking you should always write your own raps, but after reading about it more, I feel like it's okay if someone else writes it, because sometimes it makes more sense that someone else performs that for you.
Yeah, I think, like, coming from, like, a perspective of more of, like, a visual artist, if I want to work on, like, a project and I ask, like, Kalev for help, that doesn't necessarily mean that, like, it's his project now because he worked on it as well, or, like, helped me out with something that I needed help with. I think it's the same with ghostwriters. Like, it's not, like, it's just more behind the scenes, because I guess the music industry wants to, like, put up an image of, like, this musical artist who, like, they write their own songs, they, like, sing their own music, but then they still have help. It's just they don't want that to be a part of the
image.
Their image, the advertising, exactly, or whatever. Like, it just gets kind of complicated, right? But you see it a lot more, and it's a lot more accepted in, like, different mediums of art. Like, for visual art, like, you'll always have these, like, collaborations with, like, Styled By, Clothed By, Photographed By. It's just more hidden within music.
Yeah, you can't do anything. You can't do everything, you know, yourself at the end of the day, right? So you're just going to have to pick what you want to do. And whatever you can't do, then you go to other people.
Yeah, I think, like, people don't really, like, think about it in, like, individually, but everything is, like, teamwork makes the dream work. Yeah. So, like, it's not a one-man band. Like,
yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I think, like I was saying before, amalgamation, the bits and pieces of hip-hop, that's what makes hip-hop today, because you gotta pay homage and you also want to imitate. It was never going to be hip-hop if it's just always going to be original content. Mm-hmm. It's always coming back to something from the past. Mm-hmm. And you can really tie that back all the way.
Yeah, that's just what trends are, really, you know.
Yeah. You found that quote so fast on your book, by the way. Like, that was like, I was like, wow, this guy he's been getting better now as an interviewer. That was like a on the spot, fit in perfectly.
I'm on the bus too much.
Yeah. I wanted to give you some credit there.
Thank you. I think we're going to play a couple songs. We only got 7 minutes left. I want to play a song from Prado, who we saw the other night. She was fantastic, and all of her dancing was so coordinated, and just, it was, everyone was in awe. Yeah, so we're going to play a song from Prado, and then after that, we'll play another track, and we'll wrap it up here with Honda Carter.
Yeah.
Sorry, we're just having some technical difficulties here. I'm just going to try to play the song again. Don't know what happened, so I'm just going to talk for a second. We're with Honda Carter here today. Reopen this. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, it might be Sam.
In the meantime, everyone, we were talking about credit, and now that's one aspect of ghostwriting that... if anything is negative, it's that either the artists themselves are not getting credit, the writers aren't getting credit, or both. And I think that's a part of the fading out.
Okay, bye, Taylor.
This bitch like cigarettes, just a look and now it's dead. Please look into my eyes, I miss Medusa. I might use ya, bruise ya. You feel me?
Why don't you fucking want me? I ain't another bitch you picked up from the choice chain. Hold me, I just wanna bros me. Then we unfolding, what the fuck you holding back? I'm exploding that, on my fucking heart, I ain't going back. I can stay focused, yo, I'm always on the attack. The fact that you ain't looking at me, I ain't feeling that. But you can have your white girl in a white world, in a white house, in another side. I'm a black girl in a black world, I got black eyes and a big ass that I'm at back. Cause the dark is the home on my side. I can open your heart, baby, you know why. I put you on like line, I put you on like line, I put you on like line, I put you on. I put you on like line, I put you on like line, I put you on like line, I put you on.
Between Pepsi or Cola, and she can knock out Rocky Balboa. In the white, like every single day, I'm just appreciating life. The city sun is so nice this time of year.
If I found love, I'd be bound to find it here.
Speaking of love, this my Shaquillis right now.
Man, when she fell from heaven, it must have hurt like how.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Shaquilla. Oh.
Hello, hello, hello. We're back just for a second here. We're wrapping up with Honda Carter. What do you want to say to the people out there?
I just want to thank Isaac for bringing me in today. It's always great working with Isaac. And also, like I said, I have a couple projects coming up, so stay tuned. I know my Instagram and my SoundCloud and all my socials are a little dry right now, but they will be wet very soon, and up to par. But yeah, you know, hopefully get this EP out very shortly. Thanks for sticking with me, and thanks again, Isaac and everyone.
And
yeah,
what's
Gabe.
Oh yeah, the socials. We
back
do that.
On Twitter at CITR Word Street. You
can
know
you
it at CITR Word Street. Okay. You know it. You love it at CITR Word Street. Follow us on Twitter. Let's crack 35.
Also, Honda Carter. at Honda Carter on Instagram, Twitter, social, SoundCloud. You can hit my socials.
Thanks for listening to Word on the Street. I'm your host, Isaac. Next week, we're trying to get Stone Cold Finger here.
Woo!
We're going to see if he responds and figures it out with me, because that's always
if tough. You're listening,
I'll make him.
Come on, we'll make him. And soon, we're going to have...